Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. This is a show about love letters. And beyond that, it's a show about gratitude, saying what you feel to someone while you still have the chance. And as a rule, we're thinking something. Often it's positive. Often it's gratitude we feel or love we feel, passion, a desire to be with someone. Why not share it? Why not write it down, your truth to paper, put it in an envelope, stamp it, and mail it.
Right.
It isn't really a letter until it's sent. It can be a lot of beautiful things, but to be a love letter, it should be sent and bring joy to somebody else's life.
Right, and sometimes, often, as a result of these love letters, wonderful things happen in return. Not that we ever send a love letter with the expectation that
right.
we're going to get something in return, but if I have just a moment,
yes.
we have a letter from one of our former guests, Joyce, whose mother lives in an assisted living residence, and she wrote a letter on this show, or prepared it on the show, to her mother, and this is the response. Just wanted everyone to know about what can happen. So, dear Janet and Teresa, Mother just called and said so many of the women at the Broadmoor listened to the show and were blown away. One of the women told her she was the luckiest woman in the world. They said it was amazing how positive the experience was and had never heard of such a thing, meaning a eulogy to a living person. One of my mother's friends said she wished someone would write a letter to her.
Oh, that's so nice. And you mentioned, and I'm glad you did, a eulogy to a living person. I just want to go on record as saying eulogies are love letters. As a rule, they are love letters delivered a little later than they should be, because why should a person have to wait till he or she is gone to know how much you do love them and what you value? So, yes, send those letters. Okay. So we're going to go right to our guest today. Our guest is Diane Boat. Diane is hard to define. Diane is an artist. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful drawings, and a lot of them botanical. Right now, she did make wedding cakes that look like the Taj Mahal. She makes her own clothes and hats, and she's really just seems to be limitless in not only her talent, but where to put it. She also is a writer, and I'm just going to go straight to you, Diane, and say, please talk about your life and challenges and blessings. And
wow, it's been a fantastic life, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the Renaissance Fair that was a very local phenomenon here, and it went on for years and years and years, and unfortunately, it's gone into different directions now. But my life changed because of the Renaissance Fair, and I met Ron Patterson through a boyfriend in 1970 in Los Angeles when the fair was just starting down there. And I was working for the Egg in the Eye Art Gallery on Wilshire Boulevard, quite a fabulous place. And but I was getting to the point of having to move on. So I sent a resume to Ron Patterson of the Renaissance Fair secretly. Well, I didn't hear and I didn't hear and I didn't hear. Well, 1974 comes along, and I am no longer working at the Egg in the Eye, and we, Bill Watkins took me to England for the first time. Well, while I was there, I had a dream that I was in an airplane, and I thought, oh, maybe I'm going to have a job with an airline. Well, I got home from England, and 2 weeks later, the phone rang. It was Ronald Patterson, after a year and a half of having my resume, saying,
oh, hello, Diane.
Wait, it took him that long to get back to you?
Nobody replied. Nobody said a single word. Okay.
Hello, Diane. This is Ron Patterson in San Francisco. I have your resume here, and I was wondering if you could fly up today and talk to me about it.
Well, 2 minutes went by, and I said, yes. So I got on a plane. Can't believe I did this. Got on a plane, found myself at Clay Street in the headquarters in Presidio Heights. Before I even saw Ron, I looked at the building, and somehow I knew this was right. It had a feeling. My sons at the time were living with their father over in Concord, so this meant I could be close to them. It made a whole new world of difference. So it wasn't easy, but I moved myself up and promptly went on a vacation because I'd promised the boys were going to go to Yosemite.
And how old were they at this point?
At that point, they were about 12 and 14.
Oh, young.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So anyway, went to Yosemite, came back. Then I found out not only was I responsible as Ron's assistant for the insurance, four teams of legal people, the PR liaison, all the things having to do with the field, that is to say where the fair actually is, and all those crews and all that stuff, but I was also expected to run the finance office on the weekends of the fair. Oh, I had a fit, quietly. And I thought, I'm not doing this. I can't do this. It's too much. I have no days off. Then I sat myself down and said, wait a minute. Give yourself until, this is August. I said, give yourself until January. Go see this through. And if you decide then you can make a change. Well, I wound up having an affinity for everything that was going on there.
But
and
had you ever run a financial aspect of something before?
Actually, I worked. I learned to do the daily cash reconciliation for the Bar and Gallery at the Egg and the Eye.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And one time, I did a payroll journal. First time, I did
okay.
It right. We can all surprise ourselves. So I wound up having 27 people working for me at the fair during the weekends, and I just became a different person.
In what way?
Well, I can't imagine how Ron even hired me in the first place, because I didn't have that much of a resume or experience or stuff, but I don't know, it was just right. And I just fell right into it. I would come in the morning, he'd stay up till 3 in the morning, and there'd be a stack, you know, about 12 to 16 inches high.
Rush, 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 rush.
So I had to learn a lot that I didn't know about. And I did. But the main part of the fair was...
He was smart. He knew that he was hiring somebody who could learn quickly. That's so often better, I think.
Yeah. So, anyway, it just was just fabulous. And Ronald was always... he is the king of cool. When you run a Renaissance fair, you have to deal with the highway patrol. You have to deal with all the tickets, this, and that. And during the week... A couple of weeks before the fair, any number of disasters were walking through the door all day long. You know, and the highway patrol says we can't do this. The railroad says we can't cross the and all the permits involved and all the stuff. It's a major thing, you know.
How many people used to come to that? I know they were
12 to 13,000 people a day.
Yes, wow.
Yeah. So my job at the ticket house, the finance office. Was to furnish the ticket office with its funds, gather the monies in from the ale stands that were the fair's thing, gather the monies in from concessions and all that kind of stuff. And it was a whole world. It was an amazing world. And I sort of found myself there until I decided, you know, it was time for me to move on. And so the catering coordinator left. So I jumped the ship slightly and mm-hmm. went to work for Phyllis Patterson as the catering director. And at about that time, the neighbors were all upset at Presidio Heights with the goings and comings of the fair. So we moved over to Sacramento Street, and I sat around there thinking, well, I have my job done by Tuesday, and here am I Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I looked over across the way, and I said, there's a kitchen. Well, I started a rolling restaurant on Fridays, and Ronald Patterson fell right into it. This guy is a person of celebration. You know, it doesn't matter. You can just invent something, and he would love it. He also has staged celebrations that beyond belief.
But let me ask you about you during this.
Me?
I mean, you came as one kind of person. You said it changed a lot. What were you like before...
I think I was lost and just I was always trying to be artistic, but I didn't know where to apply myself, you know. And so when you have to do other things, I have a feeling that if your heart is longing to do certain activities, and either by financial reasons or whatever, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. I think you're editing and gathering in the meantime. So when you finally get to it, oh, boom, you get to it. Mm-hmm. So eventually I left the fair and stayed friends with Ron. And
to this day?
To this day. But what else happened is that I changed boyfriends. I met somebody named Robert Meyer in the late 80s. And you can't always bring another man into an existing situation as a female. I don't know. It just doesn't work. But in this case, Ron and Robert just got on like a house of fire.
Nice.
And Ronald... his imagination, I couldn't say enough about. He has reinvented himself. He had a houseboat in Sausalito for a while. He was Captain Ron. And one time we had a big adventure in Big Sur. He traded his houseboat for this property in Big Sur, and he was the lord of the manor. And it was just really fabulous. But one of the best adventures was his calling me up one day and saying, Diane, I want to have an Easter party, and I want to have lox and cream cheese. And what do you think we could do? Well, at the time, I had just made a Viking cream cheese ship for an art gallery.
Totally out of cream cheese, or did it have other things?
It was out of cream cheese.
It was
out of cream cheese. So when Ron says, what can we do for Easter? I said, almost without thinking, oh, I'll make you a cream cheese basket, and you can roll the locks up in little things and put it in the basket. Well, this led to being invited to be part of the gourmet gala. So I took that design and I made a cream cheese basket, and I put sour cream curried eggs, and over all everybody else in San Francisco in my category, I won. Hmm. I couldn't believe it. I was with Dick Smothers and I won. It was like I knew what it was like to be part of winning the Academy Awards when that happened. It was this room full of black tie people. And, oh, Diane. So the next thing that happened was I entered the urban fair baking contest, and I reapplied the cream cheese basket idea in making a sweet 16 cake, and again I won. So it was just so many nice things, you know, coming along from Ron, and he fell into the swing of opera in the park parties, and started me on an umbrella watermelon theme. He brought me the plates. He gave me the umbrella. He just never forgets, and his gifts are utterly fabulous, and he's just the kindest man. I've never heard him speak a word against anybody. Aww. It was just terrific. And then, unfortunately, in 1986 and then in 1992, both of my sons each passed away from AIDS, and Ronald was right there for me. I'll never forget him walking into Grace Cathedral, this ashen look on his face. But he's always been not a father figure, but somebody I could trust and know that, you know, it's just wonderful. And we just
sounds like he's just a rock.
And
to
I've been
you.
Making the family cakes for 33 years. He has two sons, both of whom got married. I made the wedding cakes,
aww,
all the birthday cakes. And here's the birthday song from the Patterson family. Today, 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 today's your birthday. It's not the pickles or the pears. It's not the elephants or the bears. Today, 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 today's your birthday. And I find out in any restaurant I'm in, somebody's having a birthday, I'll just get right up and go and sing that song. And one time for
whether you know the people or not.
Yeah. Oh, right. Oh, well, this is all surprised. So Ronald's friendship has just meant the world to me. He's just unbelievable. Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
And we've had adventures in France, and we took him to Burgundy, to Bordeaux.
So this friendship sounds like this is where we create family.
It is family.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And
such,
you know,
an important thing in life.
His sons kind of always regard me as part of the family,
yes,
and their wives and,
yes,
children and so on, and it's just really incredible. I've met so many amazing...
So you have a big family through,
yeah,
him.
I do. Yeah.
Of your own,
yeah,
lucky making.
Yeah.
I just want to take this moment to remind our listeners that this is KUSF 90.3 FM. We're here every week at this time. Hope you'll join us, and hope you'll visit our website at www.loveletterslive.com when you're not listening.
Thank you. So I want to say just that it seems to me this entire project, this letter that you're going to write, is really a tribute not just to him, but to what he is to you and how you've been able to become something so spectacular somehow through his guidance or being there with the right opportunity every time you needed one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. So before I see you have the letter, and I'm going to ask you to read it. I don't know which way to do it first. Should we read it first and then talk about what your intention was? Why don't we do that?
Read it first.
Have you sent this already?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay.
I did. Yeah, and I got quite a response.
Oh,
you
can tell us. Okay.
Yeah. This was August 13th, 2007, and of course it was because of Janet Gallen that I did this.
Good, good. Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Dear Ronald, this font is called Britannic Bold. It certainly is bold. Don't know about the Brit part, though. I have decided to write you a love letter since some of the things I had in mind to tell you yesterday stayed at my end of the table. Okay, now we're into bank gothic. I couldn't write and think at the same time with a BB above. Anyway, it has been on my mind to tell you how much you mean to me after all these years. Working for you and with you was a great training for a lot of things that came my way many years later. It was the method of doing based on a method of thinking, and I have become a person I never expected to be because of that. Comic, sans something. I think you've always had a great understanding of people and master plan in your head that spun out in myriads of details that all added up to some great stuff. Andale Mono, your sense of humor is one of the finest ever experienced. I will never forget that time at Clay Street when the three Patterson brothers batted him around, and all by yourself you have a great Jack Benny delivery. Bertram Lett, I'm kind of sorry we never had an affair, but then perhaps we would not have been such great friends. Gowdy, old style, and so, dear man, I do love you to pieces. So many good adventures, France, Big Sur, Tahoe, the double wedding, and finding the turkey undone on the second floor at Clay Street one Thanksgiving. For all this and more, thank you.
Well, that is just beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, I was going to say, what is your intent? What is it you wanted to say? Because I was thinking, do we have another letter in here for you to write? But it is so complete.
Mm-hmm.
It is just so complete. And I have something to say about all this. We usually talk, Teresa and I, about handwriting. That every computer, I say, has Lucida Bright and Chicago. Nobody has your handwriting. But Diane Boat, being Diane Boat,
has managed to personalize her word processing.
Yes, has managed to use the various fonts as part of the poem of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just backpedal, which is really one of my favorite positions in life, because we say so many things and we say them kind of as carved in stone. But for everything we carve in stone, there's something creative to do
mm-hmm.
that is just the opposite of what we generally say or what anybody generally says. And I think it's just wonderful. And to look at this, there is no handwriting, but look at this. Every
font is different.
Is different. And talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just love this. Thank you.
Well, Ron used to have a paper for the fair. It's called the Ram and Goblet. And this was another enterprise. It was just, oh, Lord, headaches. And it was a regular newspaper, but it was all news of the fair mm-hmm. and stuff. And so he was particular about fonts and, of course, anything relating to Old England and all
sure.
that sort of thing. And the funny part about this, at the time he hired me, he hired a guy named Pete Ronzoni to take over the graphics. So Ron was always a big artist graphics person. And he had this stamp in red, rush, rush, rush. And everything was rush, rush, rush. Well, Pete Ronzoni slowly carved away the leg of the R. So eventually the sign became push.
Push. Well, but here you have then, from what you're saying now, even more information, you're using the various fonts as kind of an intimate way of speaking
yeah.
to him. Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, I just knew he'd appreciate it, you know.
Yes, but it's so clear what you're doing. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just glad for our listeners.
Oh.
So that's another way of thinking of who is going to receive it, Janet. We're
yes.
always talking about
yes.
what kind of stationery, what kind of things would they like to have. So,
right.
Diane, you've thought about what he would like in this letter
what
and
like
what
to
the
see.
Entertainment.
Yeah. That's right. What the other person can and wants to absorb, because wanting to read it and being intrigued by it is like the first step. You have to get it read.
Right.
So what you said the response was...
Oh, he
amazing.
Called me on the phone. Oh, my goodness. And it was just, he was almost speechless, which is pretty good for Ronald. He had a new adventure. He broke his back a couple of years ago and went through a very long, painful series of things to actually find out that there was a bone broken mm-hmm. and had to be replaced and so on. And so, of all things... this is stemming from, you know, the fair also runs the Dickens Christmas Fair, which is becoming up soon at the Cow Palace. Mm-hmm. Kevin Patterson is running that. And inside, in the secret place, there's a cave chinoise. It's the cave. Mm-hmm. And Ronald dresses up in Chinese things, and he's got all these Chinese things in there. Well, this has been ongoing every year. So this year, Kevin was looking at the Craigslist and saw a rickshaw. So they bought the rickshaw, they painted it red, they figured out, I mean, this is pure Patterson, figured out how to power it by bicycle, and they went to Burning Man.
Oh, that's a whole other thing to talk about someday, Burning Man. But when he finally did speak, what did he say? Or was his speechlessness enough
well, it
of a
was.
Response
I
for
could,
you?
I could tell he was just overcome.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
you
nice.
You know, just overcome.
I bet he keeps that in his bedside
yeah.
table.
Well, I don't know, maybe, yeah. but I don't think enough people have appreciated him.
Well, I hope they will after this show.
I hope they will, because, you know...
And if you have any stories about Mr. Patterson out there that you'd like to share with Diane...
Well, that'd be fabulous.
Or Renaissance Fair experiences, please contact us at info@loveletterslive.com, and we will forward it to Ms. Boat.
Oh, thank you.
And, yes, you should all meet her anyway, sometime, somewhere.
Right.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
I just want to comment on something that we talked about a little earlier about friends who become like family. You know, our relatives, our blood relatives, have to, if not love us, they have to at least tolerate us, right? That's their obligation. But what the ultimate compliment is when we find a friend who doesn't have that family relationship and doesn't have to at least tolerate us, that loves us for what we are and what we do.
What
a compliment. Yes. It's the ultimate compliment. Really.
And that you can call on those people as family and consider them that.
Right. Yes.
Well, maybe we're just really one big family after all.
Well, that part's true. Sure.
The other thing that you talked about early, Diane, was how you never thought you could do this and you had never thought yourself in that way. And I'm reminded of a quote that I really like, and I think I'm attributing it to Chris Christopherson. This was on an interview, who said that sometimes the thing that comes around the corner and surprises us is better than what we had planned.
Lovely.
Oh, sure.
Lovely.
How many times has that happened? Wow. It's happened to me a few times.
Yes, that's why we're sitting here on this
radio
show.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I just learned to plunge into things that I feel like doing, and I found out that people are saying, oh, why, yes. And I actually believe that when you start yourself on a good path and you have hopes and dreams, that there's part of the universe that will come and meet you halfway and is ready. And so I think this can happen.
I think that readiness is really important.
Right.
Yes.
To be open.
I think the universe is there waiting for you halfway anyway.
Absolutely.
It's up to you to take that step when you realize you can do it.
And I heard something really wonderful. I've been volunteering at the AIDS Grove. They meet every certain Saturday for a work day.
This is in Golden Gate Park.
This is in Golden Gate Park. It's 7 acres. And I've been taking a photo essay of the place. Oh, my. Wow. And the way it is kept and designed and everything is fabulous. So this fellow on the board, after the work and before lunch, we meet at the circle. And this last time, we were all holding hands, and he said to the effect, well, we're here because we have sad things going on and people we've lost and so on and so on. He says, but let us consider the grateful heart. He says, the grateful heart lives today, is experiencing now, and full of a wonderful life. He says, the grateful heart does not have to look to yesterday and regret anything, does not have to fear about tomorrow, because the grateful heart lives today.
Wonderful.
So that's
it. and in terms of gratitude, you know, we sit here week after week and talking to the most exceptional, beautiful people who have been through enormously difficult, sometimes just unimaginably horrible events in life, and still manage to know that there is someone who should be getting a love letter from it. And I think that's just exceptional. Just to take all that experience one step further and let someone else know how he or she has mattered to you.
I have another list up for writing love letters. I've got quite a list.
Oh, good. We'd love to hear that. And by the way, I hope you do them all, and whatever ones you want to share with us,
okay,
please.
I tell you, I want to write one to Chuck Barris. I worked for Chuck at the Dating Game television show.
Okay.
It was the first of a line of
maybe we'll save this for another show.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this could be really fun. And is there any end to your surprises? I've known you for years, and every time I see you, we come upon something that just has me going,
Oh, dear.
But well, it's true about starting to write these love letters. You get hooked on it. It becomes it can become a positive addiction because it's such a joy to write them as well as receive them.
You know, it's interesting.
And know you've stuck it in the mailbox and it's now out of your hands.
Yeah. I've been a letter writer for most of my life. In fact, I got a job at the Dating Game because of a letter I wrote. And also, one time I was with the San Francisco City Chorus, and they were like, oh, we don't have any money, Well, I knew somebody at Chevron.
Naturally.
And so it was the guy who had promoted me for the Gourmet Gala, gave the money for the table and so on. And I wrote a letter that got $1,000 right away.
Wonderful.
So.
I was wondering about sharing your website and your creative abilities, but if anybody wants to know, they'll...
Well,
they can Google you.
I need to get a website. I don't have one now.
Oh, okay.
I've got some photographs on another website and so on.
All right.
I'm moving toward it.
I hope a lot of people listening end up somehow filtering into your life, because they'll be lucky. That means you've filtered into theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, you're wonderful, Janet. And Tressa?
Well, thank you so much. And we, you're writing to people that are living. Sometimes we have guests on this show who need or want to write to people who have passed on, and
yes,
that's also a love letter. I have an example here.
Good.
We always invite people to write letters to Dear Janet and get her response to questions. So let me read this love letter, this letter to Janet. Excuse me. Dear Janet, I was raised by my grandparents. My grandfather was a very strict disciplinarian who showed very little love and was swift with physical punishment when I didn't do exactly as he wanted. He favored all his other grandchildren over me. For example, they got cars and expensive jewelry for Christmas. I got sweaters. When he passed away, he left me $500. The other grandchildren were left with land, homes, valuable art, and investments. I'm grateful that he took me in and raised me rather than putting me in foster care. However, I can't shake the anger at him for his partiality to my cousins. I think writing him a love letter might help me recover, but I cannot bring myself to forgive him.
Ooh. Yes. Well, what does forgiving mean? I mean, that's a whole other. Sometimes people think of forgiving as condoning something, saying it's okay behavior. That's not ever going to be true. And that's not what forgiving is. I think forgiving means you just stop dwelling on it.
Absolutely.
You know, while you're forgiving him, what you're really doing is letting yourself off the hook, and him also. But to write a love letter, how would you do that? Make a list of the things you are grateful for. And maybe it would only be one thing. Maybe it would be just, thank you for taking me in so I wouldn't have to be in foster care. I will always be grateful for that. Maybe just one thing and not have to even talk about the rest. If you feel like it, you can always talk about the specifics that you liked about living in his home, the specifics you appreciated about him, even if you didn't like them so much, things that you appreciate, that counts.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you could even say, given all this, my respect and my appreciation, it's always been a sadness to me that I was the outsider. I hope at some point I don't feel like that any longer. But I thank you, and with love, respect everything else that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have to brush things aside if you can say them in a non-combative and loving way.
So, Janet, we always talk, in this case, the grandfather has died. We always say, who are you going to mail this to?
That's the thing.
And without knowing any more about this listener than we do, who
mail it to his other children.
That's
mail it
good.
To his wife. You can always, I mean, that is the thing about writing to someone who's deceased. It's still not a letter till you send it, in my lights.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be so valuable sent elsewhere.
I have a feeling about writing something down on a piece of paper, and it, whether it be a list or a list of groceries or things or bills you need to pay or mm-hmm. whatever it is, that somehow putting it on the paper gives it some kind of empowerment, and the words get up and walk off the page and become something.
They do have a life of their own. Those
so,
letters.
You know, to get it down on paper mm-hmm. would be something that it'll start moving in a very good direction.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we talk about when how do you start these letters. You just write down everything you think and feel, positive, negative. See what you can let go of the negative. Get the positive into order and just go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, a good love letter is your truth put to paper in a loving and compassionate way.
And sometimes, as you
Period.
Said, getting it down on paper, then you can let it go.
Yes, the awful stuff, for seeing
right.
that the other stuff may outweigh it some. And
right.
even if it doesn't outweigh it, even if you have one wonderfully good thing and 12 pretty awful things, that one good thing can stand on its own.
Mm-hmm. It's a good reminder. Well, we're out of time for this week. We want to thank all of our listeners for joining us here at KUSF. We hope you'll join us every week at this time. And we encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words while you still have the chance.
Yes, and if you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you've got a love letter lurking in there somewhere, please get in touch with us. And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, you do not. Writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So, until next week, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye.